Before we get started with this episode, let me point out the obvious. It's the gift-giving season. But what isn't so obvious is that you can get your gifts and help out the podcast by going to comicsalternative.com/Amazon. Click through on our Amazon banner, and whatever you get during that visit, the Comics Alternative will get a few cents kickback. So get your Hanukkah, Christmas, Kwanzaa, and Festivus gifts through our Amazon associate links. It's a smart way to shop, and you'll be helping out the show. So let's get started with this thing. This is the Comics Alternative, episode 217, a look at the December previews catalog. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Comics Alternative. I'm Derek.
And I'm Andy, and we're two guys with PhDs talking about comics.
And it's the beginning of the month, so that must mean that it's time for me and Andy to look through the latest previews catalog. But before we do that, we want to let all of you know that this episode of the Comics Alternative is brought to you by the wonderful folks at Discount Comic Book Service. Go to their website, dcbservice.com, for all of your comics pre-ordering needs. There, you're going to find all DC, Marvel, Image, and Dark Horse titles at 40% off of the cover price if you pre-order. For all of the other publishers, you'll find that those discounts are 20 to 35% off of the cover price. And every single month, you'll find some unbelievable specials. And December is no exception. Sometimes those specials could be as much as 45% off of the cover price. Sometimes as much as 50% off cover. But many times, you're going to find discounts that go higher than that.
That's right, and because this is our monthly previews episode, you can count on the fact that many of the things that we talk about today will be deeply discounted at DCB Service, and everything we talk about will be discounted in some way or another.
That's right, and you can't beat those discounts at Discount Comic Book Service, and in fact, they have discount in their name, so you know you can't find better. Go to dcbservice.com. They'll take care of all of your comics pre-ordering needs. And after you do get your comics there, please be sure to send them an email and tell them, hey, the two guys with PhDs sent me.
That's right.
Well, Andy, before we leap into the December previews catalog, we should share with our listeners a message that we got the other day through SpeakPipe. We're always encouraging listeners to communicate with us via SpeakPipe. Well, this individual did.
Mail time.
Ooh, the mail's here. That means we get to see our old friend, Mailbox.
And he didn't leave his name, so we will call him Mr. Anonymous. He took the time to tell us what he thought, and let's give this a listen.
Hey there, it's my first time visiting your website. Just heard about your podcast. Interested in maybe checking it out, but I just wanted to give you feedback on the listing of your episodes. It's really hard to find out what the different episodes are. You've got a list of podcast episodes on your page, but you can only see 13 of them. And then in the listen in on TuneIn box, you can only see the first three or four words of each episode. So you don't really know what it's about. And same with iTunes. When you go to list all episodes, it's like you see the first few words. So I'm just looking for one, episode to find a way in, something that I'm most interested in. And it's really hard to see. You know, if I'm looking for an interview of someone I'm interested in or a comic I've read, etc. Just a request to be able to see that on your website or somewhere to do it easily. Thanks.
So thank you very much, Mr. Anonymous, for checking out not only the podcast, but the website. And, you do raise some interesting questions about the way that things are listed. And probably the easiest way of finding something like a past episode that might appeal to you is to use the search widget that we have embedded in all of the pages on the website. Or if you go to our homepage, comicsalternative.com, and you click on the big button toward the very top, it'll give you a listing of all the podcasts that you in order. That you can just go through and just see what satisfies you. And doing any kind of search, you know, for maybe a creator's name or putting a word in such as interviews in a search will bring up a number of the interviews, for instance, that we've done. Or again, you can just click that big button, check out the show on the front page, and it'll give you a listing. And on iTunes, in our titles, we begin with the episode number, and then what we do. So there's a lot of words in it. If you scroll your mouse over the list, you'll get a complete one. But, you know, definitely check out all the shows that we've done. We've done well over 400 now, so there's a lot for you to dig into. So thanks for checking us out. And, you know, others listening, if you want to use SpeakPipe, it's really easy to do, as Mr. Anonymous has recommended. And we do appreciate that feedback.
Yeah, we do. And, you know, I would normally with some podcasts, I would suggest to the listener, you just go back to the beginning and listen to all of them. But I would never, ever recommend doing that with our podcast. I don't think there's a necessary sequence to listen to ours anyway. It's not like we have, I guess we have some running gags or inside jokes that recur over and over again. But, you know, we might just put put an extra like page on the website that says things like, you know, Andy hates steampunk, Derek hates Lil stuff. And I think that's pretty much it. You got it covered.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, brand new listeners, if they hear one of our comments about, let's say, Lil this or Lil that or steampunks, then they'll wonder what we're referring to or laughing about. But the answer is embedded in our previous episodes.
Yes. It's a little Easter egg for all of our faithful listeners.
And if nothing else, the Comics Alternative is all about Easter eggs.
Yeah. Especially this holiday season.
Okay, so since I can see we're going nowhere now, let's go ahead and turn to this week's episode, which is the December Previews Catalog. And we start at the beginning, where we always start, in the Dark Horse section. And what first catches your attention in the Dark Horse section?
You know, I should just start out by saying I actually don't have anything until we get to IDW.
Oh, really?
So there were things I thought about highlighting in Dark Horse and I never did, but I kind of figured you might, so I'm interested in hearing more of like what you have to say about him and what interests you about some of the new stuff that's coming out from Dark Horse.
Okay. Well, my first note in the Dark Horse section is actually the very beginning. This is solicited on page 36, and we have some sample art on 36 and 37, and this is The Visitor, How and Why He Stayed. This is part of the Mignola universe, kind of a spinoff Hellboy story. I find this interesting. It is a number one issue of 5, written by Mignola, Chris Roberson, and then with art by Paul Grist. So if you're a fan of Jack Staff or Kane and you like that art, then this is definitely something that you should check out. I'm interested in this, but the thing is, I am so behind with Hellboy, the Hellboy world, that, you know, I don't know. I need to get caught up. Let's just say that.
Yeah, that's one reason why I've kind of stopped highlighting things in the Mignolaverse sections of Dark Horse, because I am really far behind. In fact, I know a friend of mine, he had an extra copy of a BPRD trade paperback that he didn't want anymore, and so he handed it over to me to see if I wanted it, and I was like, wow, I need, and this was an early Hell on Earth one, And I looked and I said, man, I need, there's like five or six trades before this that I haven't read. Mm. So yeah, I'm woefully behind. I mean, I haven't read BPRD. I think I'm the trade before Hell on Earth starts is where I left off.
Yeah, I'm way, way, way behind with that as well. Mm-hmm. Actually, the second solicit that I wanted to highlight is also Hellboy related, and this is on page 40, and this is an original graphic novel, Hellboy Into the Silent Sea. And again, I'm sure it's great. This is a follow-up to, Hellboy the Island. What caught my attention of this solicit was the artwork of Gary Gianni. Which is really nice. Even though I'm really behind, it still has me wanting to check it out. And at some point in my life, I will read this. Mm-hmm. I just need to, you know, find time to get caught up with Hellboy so I can take part in some of the more recent stories like these that are solicited in this month's catalog.
You know, it does look, though, like Into the Silent Sea and The Visitor could be probably read. Without having been completely caught up. I mean, this Into the Silent Sea seems to probably be a standalone, unless you need to have read The Island, which is actually a while ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then The Visitor goes all the way back to Hellboy's origin. So these may be ones that can be read out of sequence as opposed to, say, the BPRD stuff or the Lobster Johnson or Abe Sapien.
Right. Series. Yeah. Although the completist in me, or maybe the anal part of me still would like to read the previous stuff.
Sure. Sure. Yeah.
The next thing I wanted to mention in Dark Horse is on page 48. And this is the next volume in the EC Archive series. This is the EC Archives, The Haunt of Fear, volume 4. So I'm glad that – I say this every time that they solicit a brand new volume, but I'm still glad that Dark Horse is continuing to do this.
Yep.
Yeah. And then if you turn the page, we have solicited on page 51 the next trade in the Resident Alien series, Resident Alien Volume 4, The Man with No Name. And if you recall, right when the first issue of that came out I had the pleasure of talking with Peter Hogan on the show. So it's good to see that this is about to come out as a completed story.
Good.
Yeah. Because, as you know, I really like the Resident Alien stuff.
Yep.
And then if you turn the page again, and I think this is my last solicit that I wanted to highlight in the Dark Horse section. This is on page 52, and there's also sample art on the following page. This is Soupy Leaves Home, a trade paperback by the creator, by the writer of Shade the Changing Girl, Cecil Castellucci, and with art by Jose Pinimenta. And what do you think about this, the art or the premise that we have mm-hmm. in the solicit?
Yeah, it sounds interesting. I was probably just, a little, I didn't include it on my list because I saw very quickly that it isn't about the younger career of Soupy Sales, which I want to read now a Soupy Sales graphic novel, but instead it sounds like it's actually something pretty serious. The solicit reads, Pearl Planket ran away from her home to escape an abusive father and an unhappy future, disguised and reborn as a boy named Soupy. She hitches her star to an unlikely hobo, and they begin their journey from the cold heartbreak of their eastern home towards the sunny promise of California in the train-hopping Depression-era coming-of-age tale. I mean, I think that the gender bending that's going to be going on in this comic, I think, makes it stand out. It does remind me a little bit of Kings in Disguise.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which is, a book I love from the early days of Kitchen Sink. So,
Yeah. It's funny, when I saw this title, I immediately thought, like you, of Soupy Sales. but, you know, to be serious, though, the solicit, though, does make this an attractive premise. And also, I like Pimenetta's art. So mm-hmm. that is eye-catching. But I think one of the reasons why I wanted to mention this is not only so we could say the name Soupy Sales two or three times on this mm-hmm. podcast, but also in the solicit, they use a word you rarely hear anymore, and that is hobo.
Oh, not in my house. You hear it all the time.
Really? You guys use the word hobo on a regular basis?
We communicate. My wife and I communicate in hobo code. If there's a pie sitting on the windowsill of a neighbor's house, I will signal Jennifer to try to walk up and steal it on her way home.
Yeah, and warn her of unfriendly dogs.
Oh, unfriendly things of dogs and yeah.
Things of that sort. Okay, so we definitely have a subtitle for this week's show, Hobo Code. And that's all I have in Dark Horse. So seeing as you have nothing in the DC Vertigo section, and I don't have much of anything as well, although the very first part of DC, there's an interesting solicit, and this is on page 71. This is issue number one of The Wildstorm. So apparently what we have here is Warren Ellis and artist John Davis Hunt is going to be bringing back some of Jim Lee's creation from Wildstorm days.
Yeah, so it sounds like, from what I've read about this too, that Warren Ellis is going to be kind of the showrunner behind a series of revamps of characters and properties from Jim Lee's Wildstorm universe. You know, maybe in a way similar to what Gerard Way is doing with Young Animals.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
And I like that idea of a kind of, you know, getting a big creator to curate an imprint or a line within the DC universe proper.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it's not as if taking an older property and bringing it back as something different is new to comics.
Right.
In fact, it's been some major events, like arguably the instigation of the Silver Age.
Sure.
But I think this is interesting for the reasons that you were mentioning of what Ellis is doing here. So I'm going to check that out. And then I guess it's the only other thing in the DC Vertigo section that I wanted to point out. And this is Vertigo on page 139. And it's something we've already mentioned before, but it's a re-solicit. I can't remember if it was last month or the month before where we saw the first volume of Jack of Fables Deluxe Edition. Mm-hmm. Well, that was canceled, and now it's being re-solicited.
Yep.
So if you were someone like me who pre-ordered this through Discount Comic Book Service, which all listeners should use DCB service, mm-hmm. And then get an email indicating after a while that was canceled, now it's being resolicited. Mm-hmm. So now that takes us to IDW, and where do you begin in IDW?
I begin right away on page 146.
Okay.
With The Cosmic Scoundrels, written by Andy Suriano and Matt Chapman, and drawn by Andy Suriano, who is Andy Suriano has worked on Samurai Jack and Star Wars Clone Wars, so several high-profile cartoon series, and so he's co-writing and drawing this book, which looks to be like a kind of space comedy. I think it has the potential to be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It has a fun look to it.
Yeah. And, you know, cosmic scoundrels, that's scoundrels in space. I mean, that's, you know, Han Solo, whatever you want there.
Yeah.
All that stuff. So, yeah, there's good opportunities there.
And if you turn the page, which is where I go next.
Yeah.
149, is that where you were going to highlight Animal Noir number one?
No.
Oh, okay.
I was going to 147.
Oh, okay. I said turn the page. Did I say turn the page or go to the... Okay, well, go ahead.
I'm looking at the PDF, so my pages don't turn.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So, yeah, 147, Darkness Visible, a new series co-written by Mike Carey and Arvind Ethan David, mm-hmm. and drawn by Brendan Cahill. A new horror series, like a horror mystery series, I guess, with the involvement of... Mike Carey here. So I wanted to just mention that.
You know, I'm glad you did, because that is something I completely overlooked. Hmm. And I think it was because the visuals on the facing page 146, the Cosmic Scoundrels, are rather loud in comparison to the mutedness, of course, of Darkness Visible. And because of that, it may not make sense, but because of the mutedness, comparatively speaking, I overlooked it. And, now I definitely want to check this out, not only because, Mike Carey is one of the writers, but earlier this year I talked with Arvid Ethan David on the podcast about Dirk Gently.
Yeah.
So that's good. I'm glad that you pointed that out.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure, you're welcome. That's what I'm here for. Okay, so you had Animal Noir on page 149.
Yes, and this is something that probably could have fit really nicely into our show, our two-part show a few weeks ago, where we looked at crime comics. Mm-hmm. And this is written by, and let's see if I can get the names correct, Izar Lunacek and Nijik Urin. And I'm sure I'm butchering that. And Lunacek is doing the art as well.
I would say it's something close to Nick Urin.
Nick Urin and Izar Lunacek or...
I don't know.
Yeah.
Lunacek.
Yeah, we're trying. Mm-hmm. And this is interesting. The solicit is anthropomorphic animals like you've never seen them before. It's Chinatown meets Animal Farm. And just like the George Orwell classic, Lunacek and Urin's animals are an allegory for today's world. Private investigator and giraffe, Emmanuel Diamond, Manny to his friends, has been asked by his uncle, an influential judge, to track down a prey fantasy movie. Adult films in this world are staged hunts where one animal eats another, and the judge's wife starred in one that had been hidden until now. Giraffe detectives, hippo mob members, prey-obsessed lions, and street-fighting elephants, and oppressed zebras are just part of this wild animal kingdom.
Okay.
Looks interesting.
Yep.
Where do you go next?
And I just go to the next page for Starstruck Old Prolgers Never Die. This is the classic independent comic Starstruck by Elaine Lee and Mike Kaluta. Now, it looks like this is representing Starstruck once again, but this time with 50% all new artwork by Mike Kaluta, which I'm curious to see now, because I have Starstruck from when it originally came out, but it also feels like Starstruck has been kind of redone or redrawn a couple times before. The original graphic novel and series came out from Marvel's Epic imprint back in the day. Back in the 80s, and then it came out again. I think Dark Horse put it out, and from what I remember of that version, it was also had additional material or redrawn material in it as well. So I'm curious to compare what all these different versions of Starstruck are going to look like.
Well, maybe each time it's reproduced, Kaluta is adding something more.
Yeah, maybe.
So the next time there'll be even more original art. So it's becoming a thick tapestry.
Yeah, I just wonder how much of the very original stuff is left even. Okay.
Where do you go next?
To 155.
Okay. Before we get to 155, just a couple of quick comments on 152 and 153. You know, last month, one of the things you and I noted was the fact that Box Office Poison is coming back as a serial and in color. Mm-hmm. And I think I mentioned on that show that I had emailed Alex Robinson for a little information about how this came about, but he didn't email me in time for the recording that we made. But he did respond to me about a day or two later. And he said that, you know, this is something that the IDW came to him with and asked if he would be interested in doing it. And he said, yeah, you know, he was a little hesitant at first, not sure if it would fly, but then decided to do it and say it said that, you know, it's a good experience. So that's interesting in that I just assumed that it was something that an editor or the publisher in some form or another had encouraged, and that was indeed the case. Another good thing about that contact is that about a day or two later, Alex sent me some art in his next project that he's doing. So,
oh, great.
That's cool. It's really good, something to look forward to. And then the other thing and I wanted to mention in passing is several months ago we highlighted the miniseries William Gibson's Archangel, and now that's being collected as a trade, and this is on page 153.
Yeah, I definitely plan on getting that. I read the first issue of Archangel and liked it, but I decided I was going to wait and read it as a trade because it felt like it was going to be a pretty complicated narrative.
Yep.
And reading it all at once would have been preferable.
Well, the wait is almost over, my friend.
Right.
So now you go to 155.
Yeah, and this is the graphic novel Chester 5000, Isabel and George by Jess Fink. This is actually the second volume of Jess Fink's Chester 5000 series. This one, as it says, 1889, an age of industrial revolution and sexual frustration. Isabel is a lonely orphan reprimanded at every turn by her strict matron. George is an inventor on the cusp of a brilliant discovery. Together they find love, but in an age of violent mechanization and military secrets, can their passion survive? This is another volume, I guess, after the success of the first volume. This looks interesting enough to check out.
Yeah, I marked this as something I'd like to look into. Now, did you read that first book?
No, I didn't.
I didn't either, and I don't recall seeing it.
No.
I guess I missed it, and I don't even know about this series, Chester 500. Now, it mentions in the solicit that Fink is a webcomics artist. Is Chester 5000 a webcomic originally?
That I don't know.
Hmm.
I mean, it'd probably be easy enough to look up, but
yeah, it's something that maybe I should have checked on before we started to record. But that would make sense in that IDW is one of those publishers, along with Dark Horse and Image, that is, you know, have been recently so diligent in bringing into print publication a lot of comics that started off and or even continuing still as webcomics.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep. And you can get the first volume of Chester 5000 as well with this solicit. So
that's right.
You can check out both of them.
Mm-hmm. And in IDW, I go next to 177. Do you have anything before that?
Go ahead.
Yeah. And on page 177, it is a page dominated by a good friend of the show, Craig Yeo, and his Yeo Books imprint. The next volume in the haunted horror series, The Screaming Skulls and Much More, is being solicited, and this is great. Definitely check that out. This collects issues 13, 14, and 15 of Haunted Horror. Mm-hmm. We also have Haunted Horror number 26 that is solicited. And then a book, Fiction House, From Pulps to Panels. And this is Mitch Maglio. Is that how you pronounce his name?
Yeah.
Is the writer. Now, is this a book about Fiction House? Or does it pull together Fiction House comics into this volume?
I think both.
Okay.
It's the history of Fiction House plus
plenty of art
reprints, yeah, of Fiction House stories.
Right.
I like that. I'm looking forward to that book.
Mm-hmm. And your friend Roy Thomas does the intro.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And then right under that, we have yet another Yo book, and this is Vintage Romance Comic Book Covers Coloring Book.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I think if you know you're going to get in on the adult coloring book trend, that is a great way to do it.
Yeah. Well, you know, Craig had that coloring book last year about the horror comics, and so now he has one for romance.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yes. And we should tease our listeners by saying that we do plan on having Craig Yeo back on the show very, very soon. We want to do what we've done for the past 2 years, and that is make our very first episode of the new year a Craig Yeo episode as part of our Happy New Yeo anniversary series.
Absolutely.
Our tradition. Yep. So we can talk to him about this stuff. Mm-hmm. And then if we turn the page to 178 and then on 179 as well, there are a couple of other really good things.
Yes, so 178 has the latest volume of the Corto Maltese reprints that Euro Comics is doing, or IDW is doing through Euro Comics and through the editorship of Dean Mullaney. So Corto Maltese in Siberia, which is a collection of short stories featuring the character.
Mm-hmm. And so this is in the series, this looks like the fifth book?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then on the facing page is, I guess this is also part of the Euro Comic series, although I don't see the Euro Comic symbol on this page. It's Calamity Jane, The Calamitous Life of Martha Jane Cannery, 1852 through 1903. And this is written by Christian Parisen with art by Matthew Blanchin. So this Parisen is the writer of El Nino, which came out just maybe 2 months ago from Humanoids, as well as Cape Horn, which I think Humanoids has also come out with. So this is a translation, and it is about Calamity Jane. Mm-hmm. And it seems to be a portrait of Calamity Jane that tells about the real Calamity Jane, because they describe her as a bona fide frontierswoman, professional scout, a drunk, and sometimes whore, doing whatever it took to stay alive in the hard scrambled days of the American expansion.
Yeah, so it sounds like it'll be more of the like the Deadwood version of Calamity Jane.
Right. So yeah, this is something that I would definitely like to check out. And possibly even talk, if not on our regular review show, on our Eurocomic series.
Yep. Yeah, that looks good. And then on the next page, I just wanted to quickly mention that the Library of American Comics is rolling out their collection of the Star Wars comic strip. That was done mainly by Russ Manning back in around 1979. And I have a lot of fondness for these comics as well. I read everything Star Wars I could get my hands on back then. But specifically to get the Star Wars comic strip, when I was a kid, the only way I could get it was to subscribe to the newspaper Grit. Do you remember Grit?
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah.
So Grit had the Star Wars comic strip in it. It didn't have a lot of comic strips in it, but it had Star Wars. And so I would subscribe a kid that lived in the I guess he was a neighbor. He was in a farm about a mile away. Sold grit, as kids were wont to do back in the 70s, to make some money. And so I got a subscription to grit through him. I would cut out the Star Wars comic strip and put it in a paste it into a notebook and then throw the rest of grit out without reading it. That was a waste of money.
Yeah. Do you still have those Star Wars strips?
No, I don't. I did not hang on to those those notebooks.
And by the way,
too bad. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was gonna say I was one of those kids that briefly sold grit growing up.
Yeah,
yeah.
Did you? Were you rolling in it afterwards?
No, I don't. I didn't do it that long. I can't remember much about it. I just know that I did sell it briefly. Maybe it sounded more cool than actually doing it. I can't remember.
Yeah, because I don't. I mean, grit's still around. It's a magazine, I think, now. But
why do you have kids coming by your place, knocking on the door, saying, no. "Hey, Mr. Kanka, you want to buy some grit?"
Yeah. No. Sorry. But I did see it for some reason. I don't remember where.
No. So do you have anything else in IDW?
Nope, that's it.
Okay. You know, maybe we'll get a collection of old Grit comics.
I don't know what other things were in Grit. While we're on that subject, I was just reminded of, you know, when I was a kid, I also, being a Cub Scout, subscribed to Boy's Life. I don't know if you got Boy's Life.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And there were good comic strips in that. Mm-hmm. I remember there being, comic strip adadaptations of, Robert Heinlein and Isaac Asimov science fiction novels and things like that. And some of them, looking back, were drawn by some pretty major cartoonists, like Lou Fine.
Mm.
And so I would be really curious to see some of that stuff come around.
But yeah,
I don't know what else was in Grit other than the Star Wars comic strip.
Well, I think there was an adaptation of Midnight Cowboy, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that'd be perfect for a Boy Scout magazine.
Yeah.
So let's move on over to the next section, Image Comics. And yes, as we usually do, we have quite a number of number ones.
Yeah, and so right away we start off with the Old Guard number one, which is a new series by Greg Rucka and with art by Leandro Fernandez.
Mm-hmm.
And it says... trapped in an immortality without explanation, Andromache of Scythia, Andy, and her comrades ply their trade for those who can find and afford their services. But in the 21st century, immortality is a hard secret to keep. And when you live long enough, you learn that there are many fates worse than death. So this, Greg Rucka kind of plays in multiple genres. And so this sounds like something more of the kind of science fiction or fantasy area that he can deal with.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to the kind of crime and noir stuff that he does as well.
Right. So how many things do we have, at least at Image, going on with Rucka right now? There's, I think, Black Magic is still going, right? And Lazarus?
Yeah, but Black Magic, I don't think we've seen any new issues of that in a while.
Right. Yeah.
Outside of the first trade. But yeah, Lazarus, those three.
And then he's doing the Wonder Woman over at DC.
That's right.
Mm. Busy man.
Yep.
So there's that. And if you turn the page, 190, this is a hardcover just in time for Black History Month in February. Black History in its own words. And
right.
The art is done by Ronald Wimberly, and they're also resoliciting, the newest edition of Prince of Cats.
Yep. Yeah, this is a book I'm interested in. So basically, it's a collection of portraits of these different figures alongside famous quotes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's 80 pages. It looks interesting. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I don't know if you've listened to it, our manga show from November, one of the books that Shay and I discussed is the anthology Attack on Titan, or Attack on Titan mm-hmm. anthology, which is, you know, based on Attack on Titan, but it's by Western creators, you know, in the US and UK primarily. And one of the people who did what both Shay and I thought was one of the best stories of that anthology was Wimberly.
Yeah. I like his work a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do as well. I go next to page 194.
Yes, me too.
And this is Sun Bakery number one. And if that title sounds familiar, there's a reason for that. Mm-hmm. It's because Sun Bakery originally came out, I don't know if it was early this year or back in 2015, but it came out from, and I can't remember if it was Alternative Comics or one of the publishers in their cohort, but it's, you know, a small press.
Right.
And issue number one of Sun Bakery is what Andy Wolverton and I, it's one of the titles Andy Wolverton and I discussed when we did, I guess it was earlier this year, did that publisher spotlight on Alternative Comics and its, you know, fellow publishers in the cohort, because we discussed this first issue. So it's interesting that it hadn't been that long since issue number one of Sun Bakery came out from a very small publisher, and then now we get, I think I'll have to go back and fish out my issue. I don't know where I put it. I guess it's just a publishing again, the same thing, but in a different format.
Yeah, I was looking at that. I was wondering, because I did get the first issue of Sun Bakery. I didn't follow up and get other issues of that. So I'm curious to see what Image ends up doing with it. I think it's very interesting that they're just starting it over then,
mm-hmm.
You know, rather than kind of letting people go get Sun Bakery from was it Alternative Comics?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. And, you know, yeah, and in a way they're doing something somewhat similar with a book that we mentioned last month, Latour's Loose Ends.
Right, right. But that's been a long time since that came out.
True,
you know,
true.
Sun Bakery is just, that's in the last year.
Right, yeah. Yeah, which, again, piques my curiosity even more.
Right. And I go to the next page.
196?
Yeah, and I'm this I'm really interested in a new one shot by written and drawn by Gabriel Hardman, The Belfry,
mm-hmm.
A new horror story. I like Gabriel Hardman's work a lot. We talk about it on this show regularly, but I really do like his horror stuff, especially what was it? Shuttertown? Am I saying that right? I can't remember now. No. Anyway, I like the idea of, we don't see this a lot of one shot full length comics. I mean, it's 32 pages, it's $3.99, and you get a complete story in there.
Mm-hmm. And that's great. Now, I really like what he does with Invisible Republic.
Right.
Which they're also really resoliciting the first two volumes of that, along with his Kinski.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this one shot I'm definitely going to check out.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I think that's all that I, maybe with one exception. Yes, there is one other thing I wanted to point out in Image. I don't know where you go next or what else you have.
I go to 202.
Okay.
And I just wanted to point out there that we're getting the 47th issue of Revival, which is the conclusion of the series. So we had Tim Seeley on one of our very first episodes.
That's right. And I'm glad that you pointed this out, because it is, you know, it's a milestone. It's not often today, you know, a couple of decades ago, that'd be a different story, but it's not often today that a series makes it to issue 47. Mm-hmm. And so so that's notable.
Yeah, and reaches its natural conclusion. It's been kind of planned all along.
Exactly.
The series would be about this length.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's good. So it didn't end prematurely. Tim and Mike Norton got to tell the story they wanted to tell in that, mm-hmm. in that span. So that's great. And I'm looking forward to that conclusion as well. I'm also just kind of looking forward to having one less comic to buy.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, another reason why this is notable is maybe something more personal for us. And I don't know about you, Andy, but there are certain titles that began about the same time that we started this podcast, in summer, late summer of 2012. This is one of those titles. There are some others as well. But now that this is coming to a conclusion, it kind of puts things into perspective. It's like, wow, we've been around since the beginning of Revival now, and it's run a full 47 issues. It's gone on for over 4 years, and they're wrapping up, and it makes me a little pensive.
Well, and also kudos to Tim and Mike for putting out this series on a regular basis. I mean, I think it had a few kind of natural breaks where it wasn't coming out absolutely monthly, but but it was put out consistently. I think there's only one issue that Mike Norton didn't draw, and that's, you know, those are all accomplishments that you know, like you said, maybe 10, 20 years ago you would have seen more than you do today.
Right. So another series that is currently ongoing that I associate with us first starting the podcast is Saga.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So if, that ends, I'll really feel it. When it ends, I'll really feel that. But another thing is, you know, as you pointed out, Tim was one of our first interview subjects on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Where next do you go, if anywhere, in Image?
I don't have anything else, so I have to go to the back half of the catalog.
Okay. Yeah. The one other thing I wanted to mention in Image and is on page 232. This is Velvet Deluxe Hardcover Edition. And the reason why I wanted to point this out is, well, one, it's a really good series, you know, Ed Brubaker, Steve Epting. But it also raises an issue that you and I have discussed every now and again on the show when we see solicits like this. And that is publishers like Image, but there are others that take, and of course they collect and trade individual issues, and then if the series is popular enough and it, you know, sustaining itself, then there will be deluxe hardbound editions of, like, including at least two trades. And so if it's a series that you particularly like, for instance, like Velvet or Saga or Revival, and you're like me and decide to quit getting individual issues and wait for collections, at first it becomes a game. You know, do I buy the trades, the paperback trades, or if it's something that is probably going to have a deluxe edition in the future, do I wait for that?
Mm-hmm.
And depending on the title, I will go one way or the other. And, you know, some directions I've gone thinking, okay, there's going to be a deluxe edition, and there's not, or at least not as of yet. But, and I mean, I think that's an interesting experience to have as a reader, you know, what format to invest in. But also, it's interesting from the perspective of the industry itself, because the way that comics are put out and collected now, It's we're being trained to read certain ways, right? So, you know, we've talked often about waiting for the trade.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one way of training the reader not to buy individual issues, but to wait until five or six issues, let's say, are collected into one paperback volume. But then a twist on that is waiting for the omnibus or the deluxe edition. So, you know, and I think that some publishers, Image being, I think, the one that comes immediately to mind, has trained me, at least as a reader, for some of these titles that I like and I want really nice hardbound editions of, to wait until the deluxe edition, hoping that will actually come about.
Hmm. That's interesting you talk about this with Velvet, because that's a series I read. I read the first arc in single issues, and then I think there was some delay, and then just kind of never got back into it. But just the other day, during, I think, one of the Comixology sales of Image stuff, I bought the rest of the series that I didn't have.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was about to actually sit down and read it before even knowing that this deluxe hardcover edition came out. But, you know, I mean, I think I paid about $10 for all the issues that I didn't have versus paying $50 for this big book. So I'm okay with that.
And so, I'm sure you can get it at a much better discount at Discount Comic Book Service.
Yeah, that's true too. But I mean, I think that just adds to what you're saying about being trained to read. I mean, I have now another another level of reading, which is reading, waiting for a sale on Comixology, and then reading it digitally.
Okay, you mentioned that you next go to the back half.
Yeah. Yep. I go to 260.
Mm-hmm. With Alternative and Albatross?
Yes. Well, Alternative mainly.
Okay.
I don't think I'd highlighted Albatross, but go ahead if you got something in Albatross.
No. Because there are things that we've mentioned before. You know, two good titles, Hillbilly and then Spook House.
Right.
But then there's Alternative Comics.
Right. And Alternative Comics has several new things on their ongoing series, Death in Oaxaca and Reich. But also Fancy Froglin Uncensored by James Kachalka, which is a collection. This is resolicited. But a collection of the Fancy Froglin web comics, which is not for kids.
Right.
And then...
Some of Kachalka stuff is.
Exactly.
Others are not.
And with this one, it is, you know, if it didn't say uncensored on the cover, it would probably be hard to tell because it is a cute frog.
Right.
Who's naked? Who's naked? And then the Foggy Notions one shot by November Garcia, which Garcia is a Filipino artist, and this is his autobiographical comic, her autobiographical comics.
Mm-hmm. Had you heard of her before, November Garcia?
No. This is her first title published in the U.S. It says, so it does. Yeah, it's probably something new to me.
Yeah. So from the good people at Alternative Comics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not going to mention this as a recommendation, but if you turn the page and look at 262, you do get a few words from Larry Fine's grandson in the American Mythology section.
Yeah, I saw that.
That's all I have to say about that. And then I don't have anything until 288.
Yeah, that's where I go next too, so go ahead.
Oh, Big Planet Retrofit?
Yep.
Yeah, this is a new work by Anya Davidson, Lovers in the Garden.
Mm-hmm.
In 1975, New York City, the heroin epidemic is in full swing. An art-dealing dope pusher and his deadly drug mule, two Vietnam veterans turned hitmen, an optimistic undercover cop, and a renegade reporter with a nasty drinking problem all collide in the naked city. But who will come out on top after everyone's hit rock bottom?
Yeah.
That lesson is good. I like it.
Yeah. It's that seems like a pretty complex plot for a 64-page comic. So,
yeah,
I'm interested in checking that out. Like, well, with everything from Big Planet Retrofit, That's worth it.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. We sing their praises every opportunity we get.
Yep. And then I go into Boom specifically on page 298, so if you have anything before that.
No, I do not.
And this is a new mini-series called Death Be Damned, written by Ben Acker and Ben Blacker, with art by Hannah Christensen. And it says, seven outlaws have killed Miranda Collar and her family, but her death turned out to be a little less permanent than they expected. Blessed with the inability to fully die until she exacts revenge on her family's killers, but cursed to lose a part of her memories every time she's killed, Miranda will need the help of Joseph Murray, an undertaker dabbed in necromancy, hoping to bring back his wife if she's ever to find peace. So I think that's interesting. You know, a supernatural Western could be worth checking out.
Mm-hmm. And if we turn the page, I'm looking at 301. Mm-hmm. And this is an Archaea Boom book. The Realist Plug and Play. It's original graphic novel written and drawn by Asaf Haneke. And you know, Haneke did the book that came out 2015, The Realist. Yeah. And so this is more comics in that series. So I remember when that came out. It's an interesting work. Andy Wolverton, if I remember correctly, he did a review of that on the blog. This is when he was still doing reviews on the blog,
right.
And had the time to do so. So, yeah, this is something worth checking out. And, you know, I'm going to mention this title again, but Attack on Titan Anthology, another one of the highlights that Shay and I discussed on the last manga episode, was also a story by Asaf and Tomer Haneke in that collection.
Good.
So, yeah, it was chock full of really good things.
Sounds like it.
Mm-hmm. And anytime I can use the word chock full, I will.
Okay.
Or the term chock full. I go next to 315. Do you have anything before that?
No, I don't. I don't have anything for a while, so go ahead.
Okay. So, on 315, this is by a publisher I wasn't familiar with before, Campfire, and this title, The Beatles, All Our Yesterdays. And I thought, okay, anytime I see a reference to The Beatles, I immediately perk up. If it's linked to comics, I perk up extra. But I looked at the cover and the title, the subtitle, All Our Yesterdays, and I thought, okay, this has a kind of a sappy feel to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that to be a fact, but I started to look up some of the other things that Campfire publishes. And had you heard of them before?
No.
Okay. There are a few publishers that are like this. I don't know if they specialize in comics for maybe younger readers, educational purposes, but it's something that they do. In other words, I went to Amazon and did an advanced search with the publisher Campfire, and I saw a number of the titles that they have. A lot of the comics or graphic novels that they publish, as they're called, are there's some adaptations, like there's one on Moby Dick and other classic works of literature. They also do a lot of histories and biographies, and so if you want to learn a little bit about World War One or a particular figure in history, they have some graphic novels that are like that. So not very sophisticated from what I've seen in terms of sample art. The kind of stuff somewhat maybe like you'd find with Classics Illustrated, but maybe not even up to Classics Illustrated quality, perhaps. And maybe I'm being unfair here. But what I've seen in doing a little digging into Campfire doesn't lead me to want to check out or to make any kind of financial investment in The Beatles, All Our Yesterdays. Although if you're a Beatles fan and you're a completist and you love comics, then it's something maybe you should get.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So where do you go next?
Drawing Quarterly.
Yeah. That's where
I go to. 344.
Yeah.
And okay, there is the Drawn In Quarterly section, but before that, we have a couple of solicits from Dover. Did you want to point any of those out?
Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I didn't know if you knew of these titles before, because Dover does a lot of, you know, these reprints.
Mm-hmm.
I'm unfamiliar with both of these titles.
Yeah, so Fires and Murmur and Umbra Complete. I'm not familiar with either of those either.
Yeah. I marked Fires and Murmur as something that I might want to look into. So looks interesting. But it's the Drawn In Quarterly section that really does draw our attention, and well, it should. At the very top of that section is the new book from Peter Bagg, Fire, the Zora Neale Hurston story.
Right. So this goes along with
Woman Rebel?
Woman Rebel, the Margaret Sanger story.
Right. Yeah. Which is solicited on the resolicited on the next page.
Right.
And yeah, this is something, if you remember when I was talking with Peter Bagg last a couple of years ago when he came to the Dallas Con, I did a series of, I think, three different interviews over that weekend that we put together into one longer interview. And this was right after Woman Rebel had come out, and he had mentioned that he was working on a Zora Neale Hurston story.
Hmm.
So now we see it.
Great.
So looks to be, from the solicit and also from what Peter told me in the interview, very similar to what he's doing in The Woman Rebel, taking a historical figure, someone who in a variety of different ways kind of bucked the system, in these cases, women, and write about their lives and how they were treated. And with both of them, it wasn't very attractive.
Hmm.
Their histories. So,
yeah. And then right below that is Spaniel Rage, a new autobiographical work by Vanessa Davis.
Well, this is not new. This is a reprint.
Oh, it's a reprint. Okay.
Right. Yeah. And in fact, I've got an early version of this, and I'm trying to look. I see it over on my bookshelf, but I can't make out the publisher.
Hmm.
But, yeah, this is a reprint. So here, I guess, Drawn In Quarterly is doing what it's been doing over the past year, is bringing back into print some books, like, for instance, Catcher's Urban Decay, right? That had been out of print for a while. Although when I read this solicit, one of the things I noted was there's no mention in here of this being a reprint. Or a new edition.
Yeah, it just says that her autobiographical comics delighted readers 10 years ago when she first began telling stories about her life in New York as a young single Jewish woman. So I thought that was referring to an earlier work, and then this is a follow-up. So I guess I'm wrong.
And in fact, I just reached over to get my copy. Oh, Buenaventura Press.
Oh, so Alvin Buenaventura's.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... maybe they're picking up a lot of his stuff since he passed.
Hmm.
And then below that is the paperback, a new paperback edition of Wilson, I guess, to go along with the movie, coming out.
When's that coming out?
I'm not sure, but I watched the trailer recently, so it's going to be soon.
Oh, good.
I'm really curious because, you know, the Wilson, the graphic novel, is not really a narrative.
Mm-mm.
It's more like a kind of a series of one page gags that are just highlighting just what an awful person Wilson is.
Yeah. It's kind of like Ice Haven.
Right. And so the movie is a narrative about this awful person finding out that he has a daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And so on. So, the trailer looked interesting enough, but I've got the hardcover of Wilson, so I won't be getting this, but it's good that they're putting that out to go along with the movie.
But, you know, what they're doing in the movie, it sounds not dissimilar from what they did with Ghost World, because that movie is completely different from the book.
Sure. Yeah.
Or the series. Looking forward to that. And boy, it's been a long time since I've read Wilson. Maybe I ought to prepare for the movie, get it out and reread it.
Yeah. Yeah. And then scrolling down now, I'm realizing it's Vanessa Davis's Make Me a Woman, which is being offered again, which is the book that I thought that was being referred to at the beginning of the Spaniel Rage collection solicit. So anyway.
Yeah. And that is an original Drawn and Quarterly book. I go next to Fantagraphics.
Sure. And that's on page 350.
350 and then 351. And the book at the top of page 350, this has already been solicited previously, right? My Favorite Thing is Monsters by Emil Ferris.
Maybe. I don't remember it, but...
It looks familiar. Mm-hmm. Maybe I've just seen this art elsewhere, and I'm thinking that I saw it in previews. But... it says, My Favorite Thing is Monsters is a murder mystery, a family drama, a sweeping historical epic, and a psychological thriller about monsters, real and imagined. Underneath that is Manuel Fior's The Interview. Looks interesting sci-fi work. It says... this is by the same creator who gave us 5,000 kilometers per second, which I think Gwen and I talked about that on an earlier show this year. This is set in 2048, the year 2048. It's a science fiction novel that eschews outer space for inner space, a moving story about the passage of time and commonalities and differences between generations in our changing society. And that makes sense in light of... 5,000 kilometers per second, because it also played around with time and fragmented storytelling. Did you ever read that?
No.
It's a good book. Good. Definitely worth checking out. And then, other parts of the Fantagraphics section, definitely worth mentioning, as always. The second issue in the new manifestation of Love and Rockets is solicited. And by the way, we should tell our listeners that in next week's episode, you and I are going to be discussing, among other books, Love and Rockets, the magazine, new format number one.
That's right.
Yep. And now we have number two solicited. Mm-hmm. Also solicited on page 350 is something that I'm glad to see, and this is Max Anderson's The Excavation. I don't remember seeing anything by Anderson since Bosnian Flat Dog. Did you ever read that?
No.
That's a whacked out comic.
Okay.
It's a lot of fun, very surreal. And if he's done things since then, I haven't seen them. But maybe he's done a comic that's been in an anthology here or there. I don't know. Maybe something in MoM. I can't remember. But I know the last longer story that I read of his was Bosnian Flat Dog. And so if The Excavation is anything like the weirdness of Bosnian Flat Dog, I'm on board.
Mm-hmm. Good. And then the next page has some interesting stuff as well, too. Kind of historically significant, I guess, reprint books. The Draw of Sport by Murray Olderman, dealing with sports cartoonist named Murray Olderman, who began work in 1947. I know our friend and occasional co-host Gene Cannenberg had recently, I think, mentioned something on Facebook about how sports cartoonists are one of the unexplored areas of the history of comics.
And in fact, he's doing some work on that right now for his library.
Right, right. And if somebody else mentioned, and I was reminded of this, that Eddie Campbell was working on something with sports cartoonists at least a few years ago when I saw him at Ohio State, and he was working in the reading room on something about sports cartoonists. So that not only may that not be, may that be a an unexplored area, but that may be one of the next big things in historical comic studies.
Hmm.
And then below that, take that eight off. The Fighting Comic Books of the Second World War by Mark Fertig. And that looks really good.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it has Captain America punching out Adolf Hitler on the cover.
Yeah. Yeah. You definitely should have that on the cover of this book.
I don't know. There's several other things in here. I guess the one that stands out to me that I'll definitely be looking at is To Have and To Hold by Graham Chafee.
Right.
A noir, hard-boiled noir story set during the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. Yeah, you know, we pointed out in that episode, or those two episodes a few weeks ago, our special crime series, that there are going to be so many more that will be coming out that, you know, we could just continue doing these crime shows. And, you know, we've already mentioned two or three already,
right.
New crime books. So, yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to this one. Also, it's interesting what's solicited underneath. And this is a new printing or a new reprint of Matt Fury's Boys Club. And if you're not familiar with Boys Club, you're probably familiar, given this being the election season we're just coming out of, in this particular election cycle, with a character in Boys Club, and that is Pepe the Frog.
Mm, yeah.
Which was used by a variety of alt-right groups, individuals on social media to represent, this kind of white supremacy, fascist kind of bigotry that has come to define Donald Trump's candidacy and everything surrounding it, whether we as a nation want to admit it or not. It's the reality. And I'm wondering, okay, so there's my little political bit, I'm sorry, but I'm wondering if this is a new reprint that is the result of a variety of people using the figure of Pepe and drumming up sales of the original run of Boys Club from earlier this year.
Ooh, yeah, that's interesting and problematic.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I would assume that people who checked this out weren't necessarily, you know, white supremacists, but they wondered what it was all about, because it was easy enough to discover that Pepe the Frog had its origin in something completely divorced from the way that people were using it, and then wanted to get a copy of Boys Club just to see what it was all about.
Sure.
So, you know, this kind of racism and intolerance on the part of the alt-right may have been somewhat of a boon for Fury and Fantagraphics.
Hmm. Okay.
It's not that I'm trying to find a silver lining in all of this racism and this depression we're experiencing right now.
But, no. I've read some interviews with Matt Fury about this, you know, and it's not a happy thing to have happened to his creation.
No.
I have a huge gap after Fantagraphics. So if you have anything before page 372, go ahead.
Okay. On 352, which is right after Fantagraphics, we have the first, second section.
Mm-hmm.
One thing here is the solicit for volume 2 of Jason Shiga's Demon, which
sure.
is good.
Mm-hmm.
But then right above that is a new book written by Adam Rapp with art by Michael Cavallaro. And this is Decelerate Blue.
Mm-hmm.
And from the solicit, it seems very different from the vast majority of things that First Second has been coming out with lately, and that is more or less all ages stuff or comics that are specifically to a younger readership. This doesn't seem that way at all, not in terms of the art or the solicit. It reads, in a hyperkinetic future, the ultimate act of rebellion is simply taking a deep breath and slowing down. In a near-future dystopia where life goes a mile a minute and the populace is kept at a hyper-stimulated haze, teenaged Angela is the only person in her family who seems to think this isn't a perfectly reasonable way to live. Soon she finds herself recruited into a resistance movement where the key to rebellion is taking things slow. In their secret underground hideout, Angela and her new friends create a life unplugged from the perpetually moving culture. Can they feel the rest of the world? Can they free the rest of the world before the powers that be shut down their utopian experiment? And, you know, this could be for a younger readership, but it just has a different tone to it, it seems to me, than some of the other things we've been seeing lately from First Second. For example, on the page facing the first volume in the new Time Museum series, definitely a different kind of readership.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious to see, because I do want to read Decelerate Blue when it comes out, if my supposition is correct here.
Okay.
And on page 358, because you say you don't have anything until 372.
Right.
Yeah. Hermes Press, they are soliciting Walt Kelly's The Adventures of Peter Wheat, the complete series, volume one. I wasn't familiar with Peter Wheat.
Mm-hmm.
Were you?
No. It's one of the Walt Kelly books that I haven't, or series, I guess, I've never seen before.
Yeah, and apparently this is a cartoon series that Kelly created to be included in with Bread, I guess. I guess promotional. It says he drew 35 issues of The Adventures of Peter Wheat, a 16-page comic book given away to bakeries to promote Peter Wheat bread.
Hmm. So that would be kind of along the lines of like the Carvel ice cream comics or the Big Boy comics.
I guess so. Boy, I used to have some Big Boy comics.
Yep.
Yeah.
And our friend Craig Yeo used to work on the Big Boy comic.
Yeah. If we turn the page 360, there are a couple of titles under Humanoids that I would like to check out. One is Snow Day by Pierre Wazem and Ah Ben. That's something that Edward and I are possibly considering for a future episode of the Eurocomic series. And then not too far under that is another book by Pierre Wazem. This is also with art by Frederick Peters, which you and I have discussed in the past on this show. This book is Coma, K-O-M-A. So both of those look really good. Yeah, Humanoids always does good stuff. So worth checking out, and we'll be talking about some of this stuff in the future. And then we get to 372.
Okay. So there's a couple things under Magnetic Press, which I don't think is a publisher we highlight very often.
Mm-mm.
The two books on the left-hand side, Doom Boy and Gollum, stood out to me. Doom Boy is a lonely metal-obsessed teen, sends a heartfelt song to his missing beloved, only to find out that his music has traveled to the beyond and rebroadcast to the entire city. Only his best friend knows that he is really the mysterious rock god and anonymous legend known as Doom Boy. So that's... that's it. That sounds fascinating. They had me at metal obsessed. and then under that Gollum, Doom Boy is by Tony Sandoval. Gollum by Cicati and Lorenzo. I'm not sure what this is.
Oh, Lorenzo Cicati. Yeah.
Lorenzo Cicati, known as LRNZ. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Set in a future post-Eurozone Italy, entrenched in a bizarre form of hypercapitalism, Gollum follows a young boy kidnapped during a political protest gone sour, who learns that he has the power to not only change the city, but reality itself. So, that looks interesting. It looks well made, too.
Yeah. Well, I've actually read Gollum.
Oh, okay.
And that had come out, I think, in individual issues. And I think this may be a resolicit because I think I've seen this volume. If I haven't seen the volume out published, mm-hmm. then I've seen a solicit for it somewhere. And it's okay. I read it because I thought that it may have something to do with the legend of the Gollum.
Right.
And so in something I was working on, I thought, okay, I got to check this out. It doesn't. Mm. And the story's okay. I think it's worth checking out. It may resonate better with others than it did with me. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Oh, yeah. I didn't realize both Doom Boy and Gollum are stars of the month, which means that they are both resolicits.
Yeah.
Okay. Never mind then. Over to NBM with the new volume of Rich Geary's The Treasury of 20th Century Murder Compendium.
And this is great.
Yeah.
Because we get, as we get with the earlier compendium that you and I discussed, a Victorian Murder Compendium, the first one, this brings together a lot of his individually published murder mysteries or murder histories.
Yeah, so the Madison Square Tragedy, the Terrible Axe Man of New Orleans, and the Lindbergh Child are all in here.
Right.
Good stuff. And you can get some of the other treasuries of 19th and 20th, or Victorian and 20th century murder included as resolicits here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
On page 373, facing what we were just mentioning, or a couple things worth highlighting. Under No Brow Press, there is Lorenza Alvarez's Nightlights, and this looks like something for perhaps younger readers.
Yep.
And then right above that, though, is something for maybe an older readership. This is under New York Review Comic Section, Pretending is Lying by Dominique Goblet, Sophie Yan, written by Goblet and Sophie Yanow, with art by Dominique Goblet.
Mm-hmm. And this is also resolicited. I think we mentioned this when it first came out, or was first announced back in September.
Did we?
Yes, because Goblet was on. She was at ICAF when it was hosted here in Columbia, South Carolina, and she showed she showed images from this, since it has already been published in France. And in fact, New York Review Comics had a big publicity campaign at the conference for the launch of their entire comics line, which included this. So, it looks very, it looks beautiful from the pages I've seen. So it's definitely worth checking out.
Right. And New York Review Comics, which just began publishing this year, does a great job in terms of the book itself, the production value.
Right.
And I don't have anything until Oni.
Yeah, I go to 381 in Oni. I don't know if you have anything earlier than that.
Nope, that's where I go. Small Favors, the definitive girly porno collection.
Right, and this is a part of the Limerence Press line that also includes, the Ojoy sex toy collections and so on from Oni. And so Small Favors is Colleen Coover's adult comic. Did you read this? Have you ever read this?
I've read of it. I haven't read it, though.
Yeah, it's great. I can't say enough good things about it. It's just really, really well done. I think in a different, it is referred to as girly porno. It's in Colleen Coover's style. So it's also adorable at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so this is going to be coming out in April. Mm-hmm. At $29.99,
yeah,
which you can get at a cheaper price through Discount Comic Book Service. That's all I have in Oni. I go next to, what is it, page 388.
Yeah, me too.
Under Self-Made Hero, Haddon Hall, When David Invents Bowie.
Yep.
And the artist and writer for this book is Najib, I guess that's how you pronounce that single name creator.
Yep. Yeah, and this is basically a biography of David Bowie at a certain period in his life in 1969 when he writes at a place called Haddon Hall, writes many of his most famous songs like Changes and Life on Mars, and basically comes up with the David Bowie persona.
That's right. And, you know, this strikes me as maybe similar to other things that Self-Made Heroes and Abrams is doing with artists in some form or another. I was just thinking of Bertozzi's new book on, I'm blanking, Campbell Soup Guy.
Oh, Andy Warhol, yeah.
Andy Warhol, yeah.
Which we just got.
Right, we just got a copy of that. So I'm wondering, they're doing a lot of this. They do have that series of modern artist stories of their lives.
Right.
But Self-Made Hero is always one of those publishers you can count on for really good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then on page 390, under Soaring Penguin Press, there's the next issue of the anthology, Meanwhile.
Yeah, which unfortunately, I haven't been following. I'm hoping at some point, though, that they'll do a collection of the new Strange Haven stories, since that series was one of my favorites back in the day.
Hmm. And where do you go after that?
I don't have anything until the book section.
Hmm. I do have maybe, I guess, just one mention before the books. I have nothing in the book section this time around. Okay. But the only other thing that I have in the comics section is on page 431. This is under Viz Media. And it is Revolutionary Girl Utena, the deluxe box edition. I wasn't familiar with this title. I looked at the solicit, and, the whole page visually, I think, is attractive. And so I looked it up, and apparently this is kind of a significant work of manga and anime that began at around the same time, the manga and the anime, although they went into kind of different directions. But complemented each other at the same time.
Yep.
But this may be worth checking out. So I don't know if I'll get it, but it's piqued my curiosity.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then that's all I have, period.
Okay. Well, I just go to page 448, and because I was really surprised on page 448 to see Michael Chaney's mug staring back at me in the book section. Michael Chaney's new book, Reading Lessons in Seeing, Mirrors, Masks, and Mazes in the Autobiographical Graphic Novel, is coming out. I think it's from Mississippi. I may be wrong about that. I should look that up. But it covers some of his work on Persepolis, Chris Ware's Jimmy Corrigan, Joe Sacco's Palestine, David B's Epileptic, and Kyle Baker's Nat Turner. And now I've read his work on Epileptic and Nat Turner, and it is really fascinating. Especially his work on Epileptic has really kind of opened my eyes to that book in ways that I hadn't thought of before. Mm-hmm. And so I really like Chaney's scholarship. And so I'm glad to see this book coming out, because I've seen pieces of this at conferences. I've been reading pieces of this as separate published essays. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what how this comes together.
Mm. So you've met him before?
I've met him many times. Yeah.
See, I've worked with him, but I've never met him, and I don't think I've ever seen a picture of him. And so this picture in the top right hand corner of page 448 didn't resonate with me at all. And in fact, I didn't even notice this book because of his picture there. I looked at the page and I saw a picture of a guy with a beard and mustache, and it's beside the book right beside it, The British Superhero by Chris Murray. And what I just thought looking at that was, okay, this is Murray, a picture of him right next to the book, but I didn't even notice the name on the photo, Michael Chaney. So that's why I didn't even pay attention to the solicit and even the title, Reading Lessons in Seeing. So So that's good. Now I know what Michael Chaney looks like.
It is a weird...
they got that mixed up, I guess.
They don't, you know, you don't normally see that. I mean, it would normally be a picture of the cover of the book. You don't normally see the author, especially, you know, we comic scholars, should, you know, I don't even know if we should have our faces in the previous catalog. So
yeah.
Anyway, but no, Michael Chaney is a great guy. He's at Dartmouth. He runs a conference there every year that, I went,
that's right.
I went there's been three of them so far. I've gone to two of them and, it's a great comics and animation and children's literature conference. And so, yeah, he's a good guy. So I'm glad to see this book coming out.
Good. Yeah. This author image has to be an editorial glitch.
Yeah, I don't know.
I would bet. So there you go. What Andy and I have highlighted in the December previews catalog.
Yep.
Our last previews episode of 2016.
Yeah, that's true. Now we can start thinking about what the best stuff of 2016 was for us.
Yeah.
For those later episodes.
That's right. And for new listeners, maybe like the Mr. Anonymous who left us that message on SpeakPipe, again, thank you very much for doing that. If you're not familiar with our past episodes, you should know that one of the things Andy and I have done from the very beginning of the Comics Alternative is to use the very last episode of the year to talk about what each of us think of as the 10 most notable titles of the previous year. And we don't rank them in terms of, you know, going from 10 to 1. But basically, Andy and I, and you know, we're thinking about it, especially now this time of year, as you know, we've just recently entered December. What are the 10 titles that we think are the standout of the past year? And then we share that with each other during the recording of that episode. So Andy and I do not share notes when we do this.
Yep, that's right. So it's a surprise to either of us. In many of these episodes, we have surprised each other.
Yeah, many surprises. We're thinking in those terms, and that is a tradition that we have at the Comics Alternative. So look forward to that. But you know, if you want to find out about the comics that we discussed on this episode, the preview show for December, and get them at great discounts, then you definitely have to check out the website of our sponsor, which is Discount Comic Book Service. We can assure you that you will find every single one of the titles that we just highlighted today at great discounts. And sometimes those discounts can be phenomenal. They will blow your mind. So that's dcbservice.com. And after you do get your comics there, get in touch with us and let us know what kind of books you're going to be reading. If you go to the website comicsalternative.com, you'll find that you can leave us a voice message via SpeakPipe, just as Mr. Anonymous did. Or you can call us the old-fashioned way by picking up the phone and dialing 415-3-COMICS. That's 415-326-6427.
That's right. Or you can get a hold of us by email. We are twoguys@comicsalternative.com. Or you can get a hold of us individually. I'm Andy@comicsalternative.com.
And I'm Derek@comicsalternative.com.
And we also have our Twitter feed, which you can check out at @2guyswithPhDs.
That's right. You can also find us on Facebook, Tumblr, Instagram, Google+, Goodreads, Pinterest, and YouTube. You can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. You can stream us on Stitcher. You can also find us on TuneIn, on Spotify, on iHeartRadio, and on Google Play Music. But you can always find every single one of our podcast episodes, as well as the reviews and comics-related commentary that we post on our blog, simply by going to our website, comicsalternative.com.
That's right. All the ways to get a hold of us and let us know how we're doing.
Yes, and we will be back next week with more Comics Alternative goodness. Until then, I'm Derek.
And I'm Andy. See ya.